Okay. Well, I really appreciate the invitation to be with you, and had a chance to meet Eric and Alan last night as they met me at the airport, and we had supper together, and then I've been corresponding back and forth mostly with Thomas getting this thing set up. And I'm just glad to be with you today and hope that we can share some things that will help encourage you as a teacher to do the best job that you can do, and we'll try to give you the best tools that that we can give you. I've been going to teacher training workshops for 30 years or more, and I've conducted a few in my time before I started doing this one. And the way they kind of always worked was that I would go to a workshop and I would get one or two really good ideas that I thought I could use, and I'd go back and I'd put them in class, and I'd use them a few times, and then it was kind of over. And this is a little bit different kind of workshop, because I'm not going to give you those one or two good ideas that you can plug into your class. It's kind of like the Chinese proverb, give a man a fish, you feed him for a day. Teach a man to fish, you feed him for a lifetime. And I've been to a lot of workshops that I got fish. But this one is intended to teach you to fish. That whatever curriculum you're using, this is not a commercial for our curriculum. I'm not here to sell you on anything except to be the best teachers that you can be. But I want to give you the basic principles of teaching so that no matter what age group you teach, whether it's toddlers all the way through adults, the principles are the same. The teaching-learning process is the same, no matter what. And I want to be sure you understand those principles. And once you understand them, you can take any curriculum, see its strengths, and see its weaknesses, and make it work in whatever setting you might be in. So these are just common sense principles for all ages. Well, we're going to do three sessions. The first one is going to kind of be short. And you can go into the next slide there. Maybe. There we go. First one's going to kind of focus in on teachers, and it'll be a kind of short session. The second one, we're going to focus on students, and it's going to be a kind of long session. And the third one is going to focus on curriculum, and it'll be just right. So if Goldilocks is here today, we're going to find something to make her happy. I love dealing with teachers, and I get to do this all across the country and all different kinds of congregations of churches of Christ. Large churches, small churches, urban churches, rural churches, very traditional churches, very progressive churches, and I get to kind of see it all, but the principles are the same. And it works everywhere I go, and I'm sure it's going to work here as well. I just like dealing with teachers. I like people who love to teach. I don't know if you've heard the story. It's several years old now, and I think at one time it was told as if it were true, and I'm not sure whether I can't validate that, but it was told as if it were true that there was a small Christian school in the northwest part of the country in Washington State or Oregon, and in the middle school of that little Christian school, a problem arose. And one of the seventh grade girls kind of discovered her womanhood. She transitioned from a little girl into trying to dress up and fix makeup and all that, and discovered boys, and she was pretty popular. And every time they would get a restroom break, she would go into the girls' restroom and pull out her makeup kit and put her lipstick on. And then she would lean across the sink and blot her lips by kissing the mirror in the girls' restroom. Well, it wasn't long, because she was a popular girl, that other girls were watching, and they started doing the same thing. And they're bringing in their makeup and doing the lipstick thing. And by the end of the day, all the girls' restroom mirrors were covered with lip prints. And it was driving the janitor crazy. And he went to the principal and said, "Look, you got to do something. This is costing me an extra hour of work every day trying to clean these mirrors, and I'm not getting paid any extra for doing this. So you got to get these girls to stop doing that." Well, you know, he's dealing with an educator. He's dealing with somebody who knows teachers and knows how to teach. So she said, I'll take care of it at the end of the day today. And just before, you know, like 10 or 15 minutes before class was to dismiss, the principal called a meeting of all the girls in the largest restroom, crammed them all in there, brought the janitor in too, and said, ladies, we have a problem. As you can see, here at the end of the day, this mirror is a mess. And Mr. Johnson has to clean this. Every restroom, every girl's restroom looks just like this. And he has to clean this every day, and it's really making his life difficult. And I know if you knew how tough it was for him to clean this, that you wouldn't do this anymore. So I brought you in here just to watch Mr. Johnson clean the mirrors that you have messed up today. So Mr. Johnson, show the girls how you clean the mirrors. And he stepped out of the way, went into one of the stalls, got a toilet brush, dipped it in the toilet, and came out and started working on that mirror. No more problem. You know, just instantly, an educator figured out how to handle the problem. That's what I love about people who teach. They know how to get the message across in a way that it really sinks in, it really works, it really changes behavior. So I like that. I like teachers. So we're going to focus on teachers making a difference. And we're living in times of really rapid change. And just to show you how this is happening and how everything is picking up speed in our society and in our culture, changes are coming faster than they've ever come before in every aspect of our lives. The telephone, when it was invented, how long do you think it took to get a telephone in 1 million American homes? Give me a guess.
50 years.
30 years, 50 years, a little lower. 20 years. It took 20 years to get a million telephones in American homes. A few years later, the television was invented. And how long do you think it took to get a million homes with televisions? 10? 5. It only took 5 years. So, change, we're jumping on a whole lot faster. And then the cell phone comes along, and, you know, it wasn't the nice little cell phones that we've got now. It was the big clunky things with an antenna out. It, you know, it looked like a walkie-talkie. But how long do you think it took to get a million homes with cell phones? 18 months, a year and a half. So, you know, this just illustrates to me that everything that's happening, change is just coming at us so fast. And it doesn't matter what you're dealing with, about the time you get used to it, it's changing. I never thought, the first job I had when I turned 16 was sacking groceries in a grocery store. I never thought I would see the day that people would check out their own groceries, would scan their own groceries. But, you know, it's what's happening. I never thought I would see a day that I could take a card out of my wallet and stick it in a machine and it would spit money out at me. I mean, who would have thought that 20, 25 years ago? But it's just the way our world has changed, and it's changing in every corner of our world. It's this change coming at us. And this change is impacting what we're trying to do as teachers. It's impacting what goes on in the classroom. It impacts the kinds of students and what they're thinking and how they learn in your classroom. So here are just four shifts that I've seen in my lifetime in Christian education, just from the way it was when I grew up to the way it is now. The first one is I'm seeing a real shift from teacher-centered classrooms to student-centered classrooms. Here we go. I grew up in a time where the teacher ran everything in the classroom. It was all about the teacher. And I still know that there are teachers who are very teacher-centered in the way that they teach. My teenage boys had a particular teacher at church in a high school class. And I would sometimes ask them after church, how was your class this morning? And the general answer was, Well, you know, he took a deep breath at the beginning of class and he talked 45 minutes. And, you know, that's teacher-centered, that he just does all the talking and it's my job to listen. But there's a real shift going on today where people feel like their opinion is worth hearing. Now, sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't, but people feel that their opinion is worth hearing. And they want to go into situations where they have a chance to raise their hand and say, but this is what I think. And you can see it everywhere we're looking in our world that this change has come to us. I get to vote on who's the American Idol, who can sing. I might be totally tone deaf, but I get a vote. I mean, is that crazy or what? I get to vote on who can dance. And I don't know anything about dancing, but I get to be a judge by phoning in my vote if I want to, and I get to express my opinion because that's just the way it is in America. Everybody's got an opinion and everybody thinks they ought to be able to give it. And this spills over into our classrooms. That everybody, even children who come into our classrooms, think, I've got an opinion, ask me. You know, I'll tell you what I think. And they want to be asked. They want to give their opinion. So we're shifting from that very teacher-centered classroom that I grew up in to more of a student-centered classroom today. And the curriculum is helping us do that in many ways. The second shift that's come along that I think is impacting Christian education is I grew up in a time when it was all about Bible knowledge. That was it. That if you had Bible knowledge, you were done. That's all you needed was to know all the facts. And we did drills in classes. We would review. We would, you know, what was the ark made of? How many people were on the ark? You know, just who was this guy's son? And on and on and on with Bible facts. And we all knew Bible facts. And then we went off to college, my friends and I, and some of my friends went off to state schools, and they totally lost their religion, even though I knew they knew the facts. They knew the facts as well as I did, but they didn't have the life skills to go with those facts. So we're shifting today to realize that facts are really good. You have to know the basic facts, but the facts alone will not keep you safe. You have to know how to use them. You have to know how to apply them in order to make the most of them. So we're shifting from just Bible knowledge by itself to Bible knowledge plus life skills. I grew up in a time of uniformity where everybody in the country in Churches of Christ was using Gospel Advocate quarterlies. They were dated. It was for all ages. I could go on vacation out of state, and if we went to church, I'd get the same lesson I would have gotten if I'd been at home. Because everybody was doing the same thing. And every lesson was exactly the same. And every teacher seemed to be educated to teach the same way. You read verse 1, you read verse 2, you read verse 3, okay, we get through the text, okay, now where do we end off with reading the verses? Okay, the next person, you take question 1. And you read that question and give me the answer. And then question 2, we'd move around the class. I never listened to anything anybody else was doing. I was always counting to see when my turn came. You know? Because, you know, well, if he's got question 1, then I'm question 3. Well, let me read question 3 while he's talking and I'm not listening. I'll read question 3 and see if I know the answer. And I'm ready when, and I can pronounce all the words. I'm ready when it comes my time to do question 3. And it's the way it was. In every class, you'd get promoted to the next class, next teacher. Exact same method all the way through. And if you went to another congregation, same thing was happening there as well. And finally, the shift that I see that's affecting Christian education today is I grew up in a time when all information came from the top down. That if you were older, you were always wiser, and almost in all things, you were wiser. But I learned with my own kids that this thing is kind of shifting. that when we got into the digital age, I learned that my kids handled digital a whole lot better than I did. That my kids could access information quicker than I could. That before I could look it up in a book, they could get on the internet and have the answer just like that. That I went from a regular watch to a digital watch, and every time the time changed, you know, to daylight saving time or anything else, I'd have to say, here, fix my watch. I couldn't do it. I mean, I knew how to pull the winding stem out and crank it around to wherever I needed to set time. And this thing confused me. And as long as I had kids at home, I'd just say, fix my watch. And, you know, hey, look this up on the computer for me. I need some information on this or that. And they would do it. And they could do it so much faster than any other way I could do it. And information, that the information highway has opened up for younger people quicker than it has for older people. And that's kind of turning education upside down too. That our younger people have access to a ton of information. You know, I've got texting ability on my phone. I have no clue how to do it. I got a phone call on my cell phone from my younger son in Arkansas, and I answered, and he said, "What do you want?" And I said, I didn't know I wanted anything. And he said, "Well, you texted me," and I had been playing with it, trying to figure out some stuff on it and punching a bunch of buttons, and I said, I don't think I texted you. And he said, "Yeah, you did." And I said, "Well, how do you know it was me?" And he said, "Because it was just a period." I said, "Okay, it was probably me." So information, you know, they get it a whole lot quicker than we do. And it's kind of changing what we do in class. And as teachers, sometimes we need to let the students discover the information and dig it out for themselves, because they can dig it out quicker than we can. We can find it, we can prepare, and we still need to do that. But we need to let our younger students use their skills to discover Bible information. So these are the four major things that are really shifting in today's church. And then I want to go to some observations. We're no longer in a Christian nation, in case you haven't figured that out. We're no longer a majority believers. The fastest growing religious group in America today, according to George Barna just a few months ago, is no religion. That's the fastest growing group. I have no religious affiliation. It's growing faster than Catholic, Baptist, anything else. No affiliation is the fastest growing religious group in America today. And we're finding ourselves, we're working with a shrinking market. If we're waiting for new Church of Christ people to move into our community, then we've got to find a way to connect with people outside of our fellowship and find a way to teach and connect with them and evangelize them and disciple them, bring them into the kingdom. So, back up. We're not ready for that yet. Okay. So there was a book written several years ago by Lee Strobel. Some of his more recent books are a whole lot better known. The Case for Christ, The Case for a Creator, The Case for a Resurrection. He was a journalist in Chicago, an atheist, and was converted to a broader brand of Christianity, and has become a good writer. But this was one of his first books, just kind of helping people through his travel from being an atheist to becoming a Christian. How do you connect with people in the world? And he gave actually two chapters worth of stuff with about 14 or 15 different points, but I boiled it down to five. And understanding, it's called Inside the Mind of Unchurched Harry and Mary, and I think this was a 1992 book. But just kind of five of those nuggets of connecting with the unchurched and trying to understand how they think and see what that does to what we do in the classroom. If we can actually reach out into our community and bring the unchurched in, how do we teach them? because they don't think like people raised in the church. It's a different ballgame, totally. Okay? So the first, back up again. You gotta wait. Okay. The first deal is that they have rejected the church, but not necessarily God. This is the way people in the world typically think. They have written off the church. They don't think we have anything to offer. They think we're out of step with the world. They think we're stuck in the past. They think we've got a lot of religious kind of hang-ups. But they are still interested in God. They are still interested in trying to find a way to connect with God. You can see this in the television shows that are on right now. And you might not be watching these shows, but I'm guaranteeing you the younger generation is watching what's on prime time right now on the main stations. Shows like Ghost Whisperer, shows like The Medium, shows like it all kind of started with Touched by an Angel. But it's that supernatural kind of, it's heroes, it's a little bit of Lost. You know, it's all of these have a little bit of something supernatural connection to them. Some kind of time travel kind of thing. Something beyond this life. And it's the world's way of telling us, hey, we're really interested in spiritual things. Now, we're not interested in going to church. We're not much interested in your Bible. But we are really interested in something beyond this life as we see it in the flesh. And so Hollywood is trying to help them through this process and giving them some things to think about. And there's a real interest there. But they don't think church is a place they want to connect with. So that's where we have to start. That's the truth, whether we like it or not. That's the truth of what they're thinking out there. Second thing, now you can go. There. They have legitimate spiritual questions, but they don't think the church has the answers. They have legitimate spiritual questions, but they don't think the church has the answers. They are really questioning a lot of things about life and afterlife. And all you gotta do is watch Oprah. I mean, you know, Oprah has... you realize she's been tagged America's minister? Because she's all into this New Age philosophy stuff, and she's bringing in guests all the time about how you're really God, and the Spirit is in you, and all this stuff, and it's not Bible, but it's spiritual, and a lot of people are asking a lot of spiritual questions, but they're not coming to us very often to ask those questions because they don't think we have the answers. We're talking about things most of the time that don't interest them. And have you ever been in a church setting where somebody has asked a question that was a little bit off the wall and witnessed a teacher just whack somebody down? You know, like, how dare you ask such a stupid question? And, you know, just humiliate somebody. And then, you know, you don't look for them back. You don't look for them to ask any more questions because that teacher, for some reason, was very intimidated by what they said and put them down and answered that question in such a way that they won't ask another one. They might not even come back again. And that's the perception a lot of times that the world has of the church. I've got questions, but I don't want to go to church to answer them. Because I've been there, done that, or I've got friends or I've got relatives who told me when they asked a certain question how the guy responded. And I'm not going to go do that. So they have legitimate spiritual questions. They just don't think church is the place that they want to go and ask. Third one now. They have little or no denominational loyalty. It used to be that people had a whole lot more brand loyalty about everything. That, you know, you used to have a service station that you went to all the time. Some of you aren't old enough to even remember a service station where you pull in and a guy pumps your gas for you and cleans your windshield and pops your hood and checks your oil for you. And it was a place that you didn't care what the price of gas was. You went to your service station because you had a relationship with that guy. And you shopped at your grocery because you had a relationship with the butcher there or with whoever. Now, it's whoever's got the sale. You know, whoever's gas, oh, it's a penny cheaper over there, I'm going over there. Oh, well, they got a sale, it's a nickel off on this at this grocery, I'm going across there. I'm using the coupon. And it's just wherever there's a deal, I'm going. Unfortunately, that has spilled over into religion as well. It's whoever's offered me the best deal this week, that's where I'll go to church. Whoever's got the best class, whoever's got the best program for my kids, whoever's got whatever, whoever's giving out the best goodies, that's where I'm going. So we're in an age where we're seeing many of our children and grandchildren leave the church that they were raised in to go to something else. And you know they're taught better, but it's a part of the culture that where we would think, oh man, I could never leave my roots in churches of Christ. The younger generation, I can walk out tomorrow. You know, if they give me a better deal over there, I'm gone. And they can do it without blinking. So we're kind of dealing with that aspect of this as well, which is making it a little bit tough for us. Number four, they want their children to receive good moral training. People in the world, oddly enough, still want their children to be taught basic moral principles from the Bible. They have enough respect for the Bible, and they feel like churches can do little enough damage to their children at that young age that they would rather put their children in a Christian daycare than in just a worldly one. That if the church offered daycare, people in the world would want to put their kids in it. If they did a good job, if they took care of the kids, if it was a quality program, they would like to be in Christian daycare. And through that, you know, there are lots of avenues to reach the parents. But it's kind of odd. They don't want to come in. They think we're out of touch, but they think we're good for their younger children. So a door of opportunity there for us to connect with our world. And finally, number five, they are very tolerant of all religions, but see Christians as narrow-minded. It's not at all unusual today to see the younger generation especially want to mix all kinds of religions. A little bit of Christianity is good, a little bit of Buddhism, a little bit of transcendental meditation. I like some Islam stuff, and you know, it's just a little bit of everything. And they are very tolerant of all different kinds of views. And the world views us, the people who say, who quote Jesus in John's Gospel, "I am the way, the truth, and the life." They think that's narrow-minded. To say Jesus is the only way to God, you're very narrow-minded to hold that kind of view, because there are lots of different ways to God. And you pick and choose what works for you. So that's a really different view that we're having to deal with even more today. And I think a lot of this is a result of television's influence and of movies and so forth that have painted. You hardly ever see a Christian pop up anywhere in any kind of movie or TV show that they're not some kind of wacko. I mean, every time somebody religious is in one of these shows, at the end of the show, they turn out, you know, they got all kinds of skeletons in their closet. They are these harsh, judgmental people, and they're hypocrites and phonies. And that's the way we get portrayed. So the world has lost a lot of respect for us. We have to work hard to regain that respect. So here's some constants in the midst of all of our of all of the changes in the world. We have to be sure we're grounded in these three things: a love for God, a love for His people, and a love for the Word. And if we can stay focused on those three things, love for God, love for His people, and love for the world, love for the Word, we're gonna be able to stay on track in spite of all the changes around us. Let me close out this little short first session with a story that I think helps illustrate this point of loving God, loving His people, and loving the Word. I'll tell you the story of a little 12-year-old girl named Fanny. Fanny was the fourth of seven children. Kind of middle class. Family had absolutely no church affiliation at all. Had never been to church. Never claimed any church. They just, you know, they didn't know what went on. Even the parents had no clue about church. They had just never participated in any of it at all. And Fanny's dad was a pastry chef in a nice hotel. And Fanny's mother was a stay-at-home mom with seven kids. And one day, Fanny's dad lost his job. The hotel said, "We're cutting back. We don't need it. We can't afford a pastry chef anymore." And so he came home without a job, lost his income, and he began to check around at other places where he might be able to get on and receive a comparable income. And like most families, he was living pretty well paycheck to paycheck. And when he missed that first paycheck, he was immediately, that family was in some trouble. And every week without a paycheck, they got in more trouble. And he searched and searched for another job like the one he had, and he couldn't find it. And they lost their home and had to move into rental property. Mom and dad and seven kids. It wasn't nearly as nice as the home that they were in. Fanny's dad finally just had to take a job at a bread bakery. Loaves of bread coming down the assembly line, and whatever it was he was supposed to do to it, slice it, bag it, whatever it was, that was his thing. And he was making practically minimum wage instead of the good salary he was making as a pastry chef. And it depressed him that he was having to do this for a living, working hard, doing something so plain as a loaf of bread, and making minimum wage doing it, and getting behind further on his bills every week that he worked. It depressed him. So he started drinking. And he kept his little minimum wage bakery job, and he drank up part of what he made. And before long, they can't make their rental payment, and they get evicted. And they find another place in a worse neighborhood and move the family in. And it's not long before they're behind on that, and they get evicted from that. And it's just a downward spiral where life is just getting worse and worse and worse all the time. And got to the point that they were living in such a bad neighborhood and such a lousy house that one of Fanny's younger sisters was bitten on the eyelid by a rat while she slept at night. Two of her brothers woke up with 4 inches of snow on the foot of their bed that had blown in through the cracks in the walls. And I mean, they were just barely getting by. Never enough food to eat, not any good clothes to wear, and no hope for the future. And little 12-year-old Fanny decided to herself, "There's got to be some hope somewhere in this world. I don't see any around me right now." But the little rundown neighborhood that they were in had a church about 3 blocks away from the little shack that they were living in. And she said, "Sunday morning, I'm going to get up and I'm going to go to that church and I'm going to see if they have any hope." So she put on the best little dress she had. She didn't tell anybody, didn't tell her parents, didn't tell her brothers and sisters. She just got up, got dressed, and left on Sunday morning and walked up to that church. Took a deep breath. She had never been inside a church building in her life. Took a deep breath, walked inside, everybody there was dressed better than her. Immediately she felt, ooh, I'm out of place. I don't really belong here. And she said, but I'm here, and I want to see if they have hope. So she went immediately to the back pew and sat down. Well, things started rolling here in a minute. Nobody spoke to her. A lot of people turned around and stared at her, but nobody spoke. And then finally services started. There were some announcements that didn't mean anything to her. There were some songs that she really didn't understand at all. The language was just, you know, it didn't connect with her at all. Night with Evan Pinion. She had no clue what that was about. About guiding her pilgrim bark aright. She didn't know what a pilgrim bark was. And she just didn't understand anything that was going on with the singing. The preacher got up and did his thing, and he was on a tear about something, but it had nothing to do with her. And she found no hope in it at all. And she said, I really made a mistake to come here today. And then it goes to communion. And she really didn't get that. That these guys are, you know, taking trays of crackers around for everybody to get a little pinch of. And when they got to the very back where she was sitting, they didn't even offer it to her. They just turned around and came back up. And next, little cups of grape juice, same thing. They didn't even offer it to her. They just turned around and went back to the front. And she said, wow, I just, you know, prayers going on and people talking in a kind of language that she had never heard before. You know, these and thous, and she'd never heard people talk that way and didn't know that you had to do that in church. So finally, you know, she's saying, man, I got to get out of here. I thought I would find hope, but there is no hope here. I just get this thing over with and get me out of here. And finally they get to the end of it and everybody starts moving around and she's heading for the back door and saying, there is no hope in this place. But before she can get to the back door, a little older lady catches her and asks her name, asks her where she lives, asks her where she goes to school, asks her what grade she's in, asks her if she's got brothers and sisters, asks her if she's ever been to church before. And she's just thinking, lady, leave me alone. I just want out of here. But the lady kept asking questions, and then she got to the point. She said, I teach a class of girls your age downstairs, and the class is about to start right now. I want you to come to my class. And she thought, oh, good night. Not more of this. I can't handle any more of this. But the lady seemed so sweet, and she just couldn't say no. So she said, okay, I'll go endure another hour of this, and then I'll know. Don't come back again. So she went to the class, and there were other girls her age. And the lady did a great job of teaching and explaining and connecting and treated Fanny with respect and acted like she really liked her. And so for that reason, Fanny said, well, I'll come back next week. I'll do the worship thing just to get to go to the class. And so she did the next week and the next week and the following week. 6 or 8 weeks later, she had learned enough in that Bible class that she knew she needed to be baptized. And she was. And it wasn't long after that that brothers and sisters started tagging along with her and going to their classes, learning the Bible, learning about God, learning about Jesus. And little by little, all the kids made it to church. Parents still didn't go, but all the kids made it to church. And as they were old enough to learn and understand, each one in time became a Christian. All because of this little teacher who started the whole process. Now, I know the story of this little 12-year-old girl named Fanny because she's now my 83-year-old mother. I was raised in a Christian family because a teacher cared. I've got Christian sisters because a teacher cared. I've got aunts and uncles. I've got cousins all over Middle Tennessee who are Christians. When we have family get-togethers, we don't have to worry about, the drinking and the cussing and carrying on that some families do. My family's Christian. My cousins, I love to be around because they're good Christian people. But it all started with this one teacher who cared. What I want to encourage you to do as teachers here is to be ready for that one person to come in your class. Be prepared every time you walk into class. Be interested in the people who come into your class because you never know who God is going to bring you on any given day. You never know the whole story of what that person is dealing with and how you might influence them and how God might want to use you to save a whole family. Because in my mother's family, it was 7 at the time she was 12. It ended up being 14 children in that family. 13 of the 14 became Christians. My grandmother, in her 50s, became a Christian. My granddad died an alcoholic. Never knew the Lord. But on the influence of one teacher who cared, my entire family was just completely transformed. And now it's going on more generations. I've got 2 Christian kids who had the privilege of being raised in a Christian family because I was raised in a Christian family. And it'll go on from them. They will raise children of their own in Christian families. And it will keep on rippling out the effects of this one teacher who cared is going to make such a difference for eternity for so many people. That's the power of teaching. That's why I travel around and talk about teachers. That's why I try to encourage teachers. Because you have the power to connect to people in a personal way. That no matter how good a preacher is, it's a little bit impersonal. He's talking to you and you don't get any feedback. In the classroom, it's a different situation. And you really find out about people and you really learn how to connect and how to touch lives. Make the most of your opportunities to teach. Be ready every time you step into the classroom. And be praying, God, send me that person that I can influence. Send me that person that you're ready to transform by the power of your word. And help me be the one to deliver it. Send them my way. And that's what happens when we love God, when we love people, and when we love His Word. And I just want to encourage you, do your best as a teacher. Be ready as a teacher. And pray that God will allow you to influence somebody's life as that teacher influenced my mother and my family for generations to come. We're going to take a break and give you... Let's shoot for 10. Welcome to look at whatever you want to. Hit the restrooms. We're going to focus next time. Next session is going to be long and interactive. So don't get too comfortable in what you're doing. Take your break. I'll call you back in just a few minutes, and we'll get going with that. Thank you.